Welcome to Sunday Morning at Faith Assembly, featuring the ministry of Senior Pastor Phil Goss. We're glad you've joined us. Now, here's Pastor Goss.
Well, find your notes if you would. They're tucked in that bulletin that you received when you walked in, so if you'll take that out. We're in a series that we've entitled Foundations for a Great Year. Proverbs chapter 10, 25 tells us, when the storms of life come, the wicked are whirled away, but the godly have a lasting foundation. So we're talking about some principles that you and I can put into our lives for this year to be a great year. Today, what we want to look at is family. Family. Matthew 12, 25. Jesus knew their thoughts and replied, "Any kingdom divided by civil war is doomed. A town or family splintered by feuding will fall apart." Wow. Now, I want to give you some overriding principles. I wish I could go into great detail with them. I wish I could sit down with each one of you and explain them to you. But I know that what I'm going to say today, some of you aren't going to like. Some of you would take issue with me, but okay. All right, I'll live with that. But what are the principles? What do I need to do to have a godly family? What does that look like? What are some underlying principles that you and I need to put into place? The first one, have the right friends. A godly family has the right friends. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because we talked about this last week. Your friends should help your marriage, your relationship, not hurt it. If you want your children to have good friends, you better have good friends. And just as you can tell what kids are like by their friends, you can tell what adults are like by their friends. Your friends matter. Proverbs 13:20, walk with the wise, become wise, associate with fools, get in trouble. Proverbs, Psalms 119:63, I'm a friend to anyone who fears you, anyone who obeys your commandments. I was watching the other day a little section on TED Talks. I don't know how many of you are familiar with them, but little 15-minute things about different people speaking. The gentleman who was speaking this time was talking about a study that was done by Harvard University, the longest study ever. It has gone on for almost 80 years. They took a bunch of people, some from Harvard, some from the inner city, and have monitored their lives from that day when they were late teenagers, early 20s, till today. And it's still going on. And they said, what do we find out about what makes a person happy? What gives them meaning in life? What makes them a success? And as they monitored these, you know, they found out that, you know what gives you greatest longevity in life? Here's a shock. It's not what you eat. Sorry for some of you. What they have found is the ones who lived the longest were the ones who had the best relationships. Relationships matter. Friends matter. You need friends. Your friendships are important. The friends you have influence your life. Your friends are your advisors. And you and I need to be careful of who we allow to have an influence on our families. So have the right friends. Secondly, a godly family revolves around the family of God. Here's the great news. You can be here today and say, I don't have any family. My family's all gone. Well, that's not true. You're here this morning and you're sitting amongst your family. Psalm 868, verse 6, God places the lonely in families. He sets the prisoners free, gives them joy. He makes the rebellious live in a sun-scorched land. So you and I need to understand that I have a family in the family of God. You know, in our culture today, in America, we say it takes a village to raise a family. Or the government tries to raise a family. In reality, it's the church. We are the ones who help raise families. You tell me a place where you're going to be able to bring your kids or your grandkids and them have the most healthy influence in their life than upstairs in kids' church or downstairs in a nursery. Jesus considered his brothers and sisters as those who did God's will. In fact, Jesus says something that's just hard for us to grab a hold of, and we reject it for a while. But here's what he says. Mark 3:31. Jesus' mother and brothers come to see him. They stood outside and sent word for him to come out and talk with them. In other words, they're pulling the family card on him. He's in the crowd. He's teaching. Hey, we want to see you. Come here. And there was a crowd sitting around Jesus, and someone said, your mother and your brothers are outside asking for you. And Jesus replied, now notice, who's my mother and who's my brothers? He looked around at those around him and said, look, these are my mothers and brothers. In other words, these are my family. Anyone who does God's will is my family, is my brother, sister, mother. Over 280 times in the New Testament is the phrase brothers and sisters used. And you're never going to understand family completely until you understand that you're a part of the family of God. It's not just your little family off isolated by itself. That's the most unhealthy thing in the world you can do. You want to destroy a family? Just try to take your family off and make it all by yourself. But when you understand that we are a part of the family of God, and this family adds life to my family, and this family is as important, if not more important, than my natural family, according to what Jesus just said here, right? And so you and I have to understand the importance of how much we need each other as brothers and sisters, as family in Christ. We are a part of the family of God. And the world will do everything it can to keep you away from that family. The world will do everything it can to diminish the influence of that family. Why? Because it's so important to us, isn't it? And it's more than, well, I'll just bring my kids to church. Well, I put my kids in church all the time and I didn't. No, no, no. It's teaching your children, teaching your family that we are a part of a greater family and we love family. Okay, four or five of you love family. The rest of you, I understand, but you know, a couple weeks we're going to do a Super Sunday. Why? Family. It's just great to be with family. Well, I got things to do, and you got family, right? So that becomes critical. If in this year you want to have a great family, expand your family. Make yourself and your family a part of the family of God. Thirdly, a godly family has a religious commitment. Now, I'm taking this a step farther. This is just much more than just me coming to church and being a part of a family. There is a commitment that comes into this that I have to have in my life. Psalm 34, verse 11. Come, my children, listen to me, and I will teach you to fear the Lord. The best thing you and I can do for our families is to be a spiritual person. Our main job as a parent, our main job as a grandparent, is to teach our children about God. How you live will have a greater impact on your kids than what you say. Your example will do more to influence your family than your words. Now, I'm going to say something here. Don't miss this. Most marriage problems are not marriage problems. They're God problems. Because when we're right with God, everything else seems to work out. We set standards. Deuteronomy 11:18. Here's God's instruction to Israel. Commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these words of mine. Tie them to your hands. Wear them on your forehead as reminders. Teach them to your children. Talk about them when you're at home, when you're on the road, when you're going to bed, when you're getting up. Write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates so that as long as the sky remains above the earth, you and your children may flourish in the land the Lord swore to give to your ancestors. Be careful to obey all these commandments I'm giving you. Show love to the Lord your God by walking in his ways and holding tightly to them. So the best thing I can do for my kids is be a godly person. The best thing I can do for my grandkids is to be a godly person, to let my example speak volumes. And please hear me, it's never too late to start that. Well, what do I do for my kids? I don't understand them. It's so hard, it's so difficult. You know, the world we live in, you got basically four tasks as a parent or grandparent to do with your children. Let me just give them to you. Number one, you prepare your kids for life. That means you are preparing your kids to leave you. Please hear me. One way or another, by tragedy or by design, your kids are leaving you. And if you try to hold on to them, you are raising a very difficult child. And my job as a parent is to prepare them for life. That means that when they run into problems, I don't always step in. Because you know what? Life isn't fair, is it? Life is hard, isn't it? And if all you try to do is protect your kids from all the issues of life, you are going to raise an immature child. Job as a parent is to let them go. Quit trying to control them. Because you only have a certain time. And after that, your time is done. Even though maybe sometimes they come back. You're still not in control. And so you prepare your kids for life. Let me help them grow up and know how to deal with what life brings their way. Spiritually, physically, financially, socially, relationships, all of that. Prepare them for life. Second task, protect your kids in storms. Now, when troubles come, there are some protecting things you need to do for your children. Now, please hear me. You don't protect your 5-year-old like you do your 15-year-old. Your 5-year-old needs a little more protection than your teenager. And part of this preparing them for life is when the storm comes, you need to know as a parent when I need to step in and protect them and when I need to step away and let them deal with it. But my job as a parent, when that first child comes in at that little baby, my job is to protect them. And as they get older, I protect them less and less because I've taught them how to deal with the issues of life. If your kid is 40 years old and you're still trying to protect them, stop it. Thirdly, play with your kids for fun. Kids will go where they have a good time. Play with them. Have fun with them. Let the home be a place of fun. If you're a grandparent, when the grandkids come over, have fun. They'll want to come back. If you don't, they don't want to go. So I need to let them know that in the midst of all of life, there's still a lot of joy and happiness to be found. You and I are called to be joyful people. And if life is always just drudgery and misery and trying to live up to something, nobody's going to enjoy that, are they? So I need to teach them how to smile. I need to teach them some joy. I need to show them how to enjoy the life that they've got. Play with them. Have fun with them. Even when they get older. Okay, I'll keep going. Fourthly, point your kids to God. Set the example. Live the life. Well, what if they don't listen to me? What if I live the life and they tend to wonder? All of us tend to wonder a little bit at times, don't we? My job is to do what I'm responsible for, and now it becomes their task to live their life. I can't control that. I can't control them. I commit them to God. God will take care of them, but I have done what I can do to honor God. And my main responsibility, I want to raise a child who knows God. Now, I can't accept Christ for them. I can't force them. But I can make it very certain that they were exposed to what they needed to be exposed to. So if you do those four things, do you think your kids would be pretty well off? Probably. So that's a good job description, isn't it? You do those four things, you think as a grandparent you'll be satisfied with what's happening? That's all you can do, right? So you go on. So you come to that place where we come and we have a commitment that says, you know what? I am committed to God. And we use the term religion, but that's not a bad term sometimes. There's a religious commitment here. We're going to do this. My number one priority as a parent, as a grandparent, as a friend, as an aunt, as an uncle, as someone who's connected, I want to set the example so that they will see Christ in me and know there's a difference. And you see, if they see Christ in me and all they see is a grumpy old person, they don't want that God. Do they? No. No. Next, I'll keep moving. It's not going to get any better, but I'll keep moving. A godly family has mutual respect. Now, please do not misunderstand me as I go through this, although I'm pretty certain many of you will. God put things in order. And whenever you and I get things out of order, there is a price to pay. And many families are out of order. And they wonder why things aren't going as they should. And God has set order in the home. Ephesians chapter 5. I'm going to just read a couple different verses out of there. And further, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Stop there. What's the job of a husband and wife? Submit to one another. You see, it's always kind of frightening to me. Because we've got the wedding thing going on in our day and time, and it's just getting worse and worse because it's the bride's day. Now, in biblical times, it was the man's day, but things have shifted. It's the bride's day. But you know what I've learned? She doesn't expect just to have that day. Right? Yeah. Submit to one another. Okay? For wives, this means, okay, here's what it means for wives. Submit to your husbands as you do to the Lord. For husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his life for her to make her holy and clean, washed by the cleansing of God's word. Now, that's pretty clear. Here's what you're to do. You're to serve one another. Verse 30. So I say again, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Now, when that gets out of order, there is chaos in a home. Because, you know, I know why? Because everything you're going to be dealing with, this is going to be an undercurrent of who's in control. Colossians 3:18. Wives, submit to your husbands as is fitting for those who belong to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and never treat them harshly. Children, always obey your parents, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not aggravate your children or they will become discouraged. Now that's a pretty great job description. So why do we wrestle so much? Well, it started back at the very beginning, Adam and Eve. Because you see, when the first sin happened, who was the one leading it? Eve. Now, Adam was with her. So we can't just blame her. You see, if things had been in order, Adam would have stepped up to the plate. Adam would have said, you know what, Eve? God told us not to do this. Walk away. Let's go. But instead, Adam ate also. When God's pronouncing the curse on Eve, he did a curse on Satan, a curse on Eve, a curse on Adam. On Eve, it's childbirth, and then he says this, Eve, you're always going to want to control your husband. We live in a day and time where everybody wants to be in control. And things get out of order. And when things get out of order, there is no mutual respect. And we don't serve each other. We control. Now, this doesn't give a husband a right to stand up and say, woman, I'm in charge here. Do what I say. I mean, if you do that, you're an idiot. I mean, just plain and simple. You're just stupid. Okay? But it does give the man this responsibility. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And you can follow me on that one. And I'm going to be the man that you've called me to be. And I'm going to do everything I can to seek God and to please God. And I'll lead us as a godly family. That's what it means. That's what it's about. Because if you're always fighting about who's going to get what, you're not serving each other, are you? And marriage is not about, wow, I'm going to get to marry this person, and this person's going to make me so happy, and this person's going to complete my life, and this person's going to make life so wonderful for me. They're seldom thinking, I'm getting married, and I get to serve this person. I get to live my life serving them. And yet that's exactly what God calls us to do, isn't it? And yet we live in a day and time that struggles. 1 Peter 3:1, in the same way you wives must accept the authority of your husbands, then even if some refuse to obey the good news, your godly lives will speak to them without any words. I'm not going there. They will be won over by observing your pure and reverent lives. Don't be concerned about the outward beauty of fancy hairstyle and expensive jewelry, beautiful clothes. You should clothe yourselves and stay with the beauty that comes from within. The unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is so precious to God. That's how the holy women of old made themselves beautiful. They put their trust in God and accepted the authority of their husbands. In the same way, you husbands, notice, in the same way, you husbands must give honor to your wives. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. She may be weaker than you are, but she is your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Treat her as you should, so that your prayers will not be hindered. You see, when kids know that things are in order, it gives them security. When they know that there's conflict, kids are smart enough to play you against each other. And they know where the fault lies, where that line is, where I can get in and I can take this crack and I can make it bigger and exploit it. Becomes critical. But unfortunately, here's what we've done. We gave up on God's wisdom and have settled for the world's ways. Oh, this is what the world says. This is what everybody propagates in our culture today. We have followed our feelings instead of our faith. Thirdly, we've trusted ourselves more than we've trusted God. And we want to be served rather than to serve. And if you're going to have a godly family, you have to come to that place in your life where you have mutual respect for one another. Because if you don't, there's always going to be turmoil in the home. Lastly, a godly family has redeeming grace and mercy. That means this, that as I'm dealing with others, I give them grace and mercy. Ephesians 4:30. Do not bring sorrow to God's Holy Spirit by the way you live. Remember, he's identified you as his own, guaranteeing that you'll be saved on the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. Instead, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. Now you see, we struggle. We don't want to give grace and mercy. We want to control because we want to get what we want. And if it means that I got to give some harsh words, I'll give them just so I can manipulate and get what I want to get. And what happens is we have conflict, and every home will have conflict. That's not the issue. The issue is, are you going to resolve that conflict? Are you going to deal with it? Or are you just going to try to pretend it doesn't exist and deal with it for the rest of your life? Are you going to be honest about it? Are you going to take some godly ways in order to do things so that things can be resolved rather than just keep steaming underneath the surface? You need to, if you're going to fight, fight to resolve it, not to win it. Fight for peace, not to get your way. Now please hear me. The pain of unresolved conflict is greater than the pain of resolving it. And when you come to a place of disagreement in a home, when you come to a place where there's conflict, where you come to issues that you've got to resolve and work through them, but do it with grace and mercy, not with force and might. Not with, I'm going to get my way and get what I want. It's not me, it's our. And I will do whatever I need to do to live in peace. To resolve this in a manner that is graceful and merciful. Colossians 3:12. Since God chose you to be the holy people he loves, you must clothe yourself with tender-hearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. Make allowances for each other's faults. Let's stop for a moment. Is the person you're with today, do they got any faults? Come on. Yeah. Make allowance for them. Don't quit. Don't continually pick at them. Don't continually force them. Make allowance. Quit trying to change them. Make allowance for each other's faults. Forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. Above all, clothe yourself with love, which binds us all together in perfect harmony. And let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your hearts. For as members of one body, you're called to live in peace and always be thankful. So many times what we need to give to someone else is some grace and mercy. So many times what we need to do in order to resolve the issues is grace and mercy. That's not weakness. That's not capitulation. That's not giving in. That's giving people what they deserve and what they need. You see, when you lay down your life, you find your life. That is the principle of Scripture, correct? We think when I lay down my life, they're going to walk all over me, right? Well, if I'm not a doormat. Well, really? Maybe you should be. Oh, boy. I know. I'm going to hear it on that one, aren't I? You see, you lay down your life for others. You don't have to have your way. You give grace and mercy. And I'll guarantee you, if you'll do that, you'll get more than you can imagine. Because here's the deal. Not only do other people need my grace and mercy, I need grace and mercy. And I need it a lot. And if I need it, can I give to others what I need, knowing that I can get it back? And you're probably here today saying, you know what, I looked through this and boy, I don't know. Maybe you look at it like, boy, have I blown this? Or you look at it, boy, I'm not sure this will work. Or maybe you look at this and go, really, is this right? Here's the deal. I've got great news for you today. We serve a God that no matter where we're at, he gives us his grace and his mercy. And that no matter where you are, what, how things have gone or how things are going, God says, look, I don't want to just pound on you and get my way with you. I want to give you grace and mercy so that you can give grace and mercy to others. The writer to Hebrews in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 14 says, since then we have such a great high priest, speaking of Jesus, who has entered heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to what we believe. This high priest of ours understands our weaknesses, for he faced all of the same testings we do, yet he didn't sin. So let's come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. There, we will receive his mercy, and we will find grace to help us when we need it most. Can somebody come to you, one of your kids, a good friend? And can they say, I know I can come to you because I'll receive grace and mercy. You won't beat me up. You won't throw me out. You'll accept me. And there's always this fine line as a parent you're struggling with, as a grandparent. There's times when, yes, you have to discipline. But there's also times when you need to give grace and mercy. Can you give grace and mercy? It'll change your life and your family's. So if you'll take these principles, put them into practice, I think this year will be a great year for your family. Proverbs 12:7. The wicked die and disappear, but the family of the godly stands firm.
Thank you for joining us for today's service. If you would like to talk with someone about what you've heard, please visit our website at faith.ag or call us at 239-543-2700. If you're in the Fort Myers area and don't already have a church home, you're invited to join us for Sunday morning at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m. Faith Assembly is located at 7101 Bayshore Road. Join us again next week for Sunday Morning. Faith Assembly Sunday Morning is a production of Faith Assembly Media Tech, North Fort Myers, Florida.